WWE Hall of Famer Kurt Angle, and you're listening to Main Event Madness. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
All right. Wrestling podcasts are a dime a dozen these days, but you want a show that you can feel is yours and a show you can react on and react with. Well, Ask and You Shall Receive, Main Event Madness is now your reaction show, as we're live after every pay-per-view at 11:30 p.m. Eastern, blogtalkradio.com/prowrestling.biz and wrestling-news.net are the places to be, as we have new episodes every Sunday. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Main Event Madness. Madness Unleashed, a prowrestling.biz radio network production. We here at Main Event Madness pride ourselves on being able to connect with all of you during the show and, more importantly, after the show. And you want more ways to do it? No problem. Facebook.com/Main Event Madness is the official Facebook page of Main Event Madness, and it's loaded with columns, news, opinions, as well as upcoming guests, showtimes, and more. Check us out and give us a like today. Facebook.com/Main Event Madness. So you're a wrestling fan, and you want news, and you love hearing about different shows. No problem. Wrestling-news.net has you covered with news on all of your favorite promotions, including exclusives you won't find anywhere else. Also, Wayne Daly has you covered with results from shows almost anywhere in the globe. Check him out today. Wrestling-news.net.
CrewRoundtable.com is the place to find discussion and analysis on all the hot news topics taking place in the Greater Toronto Area. Join CrewRoundtable.com for fun and entertaining talk on news, current events, and listener-suggested topics. Unlike mainstream media, CrewRoundtable.com gives you all sides to the story so you can make up your own mind. Visit CrewRoundtable.com.
We are joined here with upcoming WWE Hall of Famer Kurt Angle, and he's taking the time to talk to us. Very busy schedule. We really do appreciate your time, Kurt, and thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so in life, we often learn about our mistakes. The Angle Strong mobile application is incredible. It's become a labor of love for you. Talk, if you could, about how the concept first came about and what drove you to push for its development.
Well, you know, the speed forward, and once I got out of rehab, there wasn't any aftercare. I you know, you're taught rehab to, you know, take care of your life and follow the rules in rehab. And, you know, the longer you're away from rehab, the more you tend to forget what you were taught. And, you know, you can go through all the booklets they give you and everything like that, but nobody's really holding you by the hand. When you are in rehab, they do a tremendous job of taking care of you, make sure that, you know, you're healthy, you're eating right, you're exercising, you're going to classes, you're learning about your addiction and recovery. But afterward, there's nothing but AA meetings if you want to go. It's really difficult if you're working every day, 8 to 12 hours a day. If you have a family, a wife and kids, if you travel throughout the world like I do, there's really nothing for you unless you want to, you know, pay for a psychiatrist or a counselor, which can be pretty pricey. So I wanted to come out with my own app, and I figured that this would help people stay in recovery. And also, you know, having the AngleStrong.com initiative where you can go there and learn about your addiction, about your recovery. We're going to have AA meetings closest to your rehab, best suited for you. Positive daily messages. Workouts, diet, the whole ball of wax. And the app is incredible. It's not my app. I teamed up with a doctor named Dr. Jonas, who's a recovering addict of 30 years. He came up with this app. It's incredible. And, you know, it's HIPAA approved. It's an award-winning app by the government. It was the perfect timing. We both met. And he needed a face. I needed an app. And we came together and created the Angle Strong app. And it's a really cool concept. I mean, when you check in daily, if you don't check in every day, your lifelines, whether it be your family, your loved ones, your sponsor, will be notified. It holds you accountable. And if you do relapse, GPS enabled, so we're going to find you. But our goal is to keep people in recovery and not to relapse. There's a chat portion of the app where you go and talk to other recovering addicts. Talk about your story. We want you to talk about your recovery. We want you to talk about your addiction, your past, your life, because it does help. When I do these speeches, to youth, to adults, recovering addicts, people that are addicts, I feel better after I talk about my life story. When I went to rehab, I was told, don't tell anybody you're in rehab, don't tell anybody about your problems. When you get out, forget it never ever happened. Well, now we have an epidemic. Over 60,000 people died in the last 2 years from opioid addiction, opioid overdoses. And I can't keep quiet any longer. It's just gotten so bad that I want to do something to help others to stay in recovery.
I actually have downloaded the app itself, and I do get just a daily email that's sent out. I think it's a Flex Strong or Flex Appeal, and to that it tells you just something motivational and something that you can even just connect to, which is great. So I did some research on my own, and I found, even though it's not something that has affected me, I can definitely see the benefits just from an outsider looking in.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we're excited about it. This is the first of its kind, and there are a lot of groups out there, AA groups, NA groups that are doing a lot of good, but they're not really well known. And I believe the Stango Strong app will help a lot of people out. Hopefully we get the more the better. I'm not in this for financial reasons. I'm not making any money from this. But the app being $1 a day, compared to everything else, rehab and counseling and psychiatrists and treatment, that could be really pricey. So this is really cheap to keep somebody in recovery. And, I really commend Dr. Jonas on what he's been able to do with the app.
You just touched upon the opiate addiction. Now, as a Canadian, I'm generally not as familiar with the growing numbers that have been cited that you just mentioned in the U.S. How can you see with it changing with proper support, with proper things in place to reduce those numbers, whether it's Angle Strong tied or not? How do you think the proper forms or channels can be put in place?
I think the word needs to get out there. It's been quiet for so long. Nobody's really talked about it. The politicians just started talking about it this past year. That's how bad it's gotten. There's really, it's been kept a secret for so long. And a lot of people start out usually with pain. A good portion of them start with something that occurred to them, whether they got hurt or they have a bad back or a bad neck or bad knees, and they start taking pain medication. Mm-hmm. That pain medication, your body grows a tolerance to it, and once you have that tolerance, you have to double the dose, and then you have to double it again, you have to double it again. And then after a while, it's not doing anything for you because your body goes to tolerance, and there is a euphoric feeling to it, that no longer occurs. So you start chasing that euphoric feeling. After a while, if there's no more euphoric feeling, it's just you're taking them so you don't go through withdrawal. And a lot of addicts would admit this. If they didn't have to go through withdrawal, I think a lot of them would probably quit. It's just really hard to get over that that mountain of being sick, like you're almost, like you're dying, you're sweaty, you're going to the bathroom all the time, you're throwing up all the time, you're having cold sweats. It's the worst feeling in the world. And when I went to rehab, it took me a week to get through that. And it's a very painful process. And a lot of addicts do not want to go through that.
Is that the withdrawal process that's going on?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the withdrawal process. Any rehab center, they're going to put you in there between 3 and 7 days. Through withdrawal, detox, mm-hmm. and then once you do that, then you'll start learning about your class, about your addiction and your recovery. You'll be going to classes for the next three and a half weeks.
Seeing as that Angle Strong is just in its infancy, what are your eventual hopes for the app itself and the program moving forward? If you were to have foresight as to, like, looking 6 months, a year down the road?
Well, the one thing we want to do is we want to stop the overdoses. That's the most important concept. When you have, last year they just said it could have been up to 53,000 opioid overdoses. That's higher than motor vehicle deaths. This has now become the you know, this, it's actually higher than gun violence.
Wow.
This is the epidemic. This is the one that everybody's turned their back to for so long. And, you know, a lot of doctors don't want to be held accountable because, you know, a lot of them are the ones feeding the patients, the painkillers. Because of that, a lot of people end up losing their family, losing their money, losing their job, and then they resort to heroin. Heroin's a cheaper form of getting high.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where a lot of the, you know, obviously that's where a lot of the overdoses occur. You know, I will tell you this, I've always had some form of money. So I never really hit that point where I didn't have my job or my my family left me or I lost all my money. And as an addict, I know that when I was going through the worst part of my addiction,
mm-hmm.
I would have resorted to heroin if I had to. I wanted that drug so badly. I didn't care about anything else but the drug. And a lot of recovery guys would say, oh, I would have never went to heroin. You know, I would have stuck with just painkillers. I was fine. No. Once you lose everything and you don't have the money and you can't afford painkillers, especially if you're buying them on the street, they could be up to $30 a pill.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're going to resort to heroin.
I know you said the best form of being able to change things is being able to get the word out, and that was something that you've talked about with Angle Strong itself. And at times our best contributions in life are what we can give back, and as you've mentioned, being a face is going to help this. Do you kind of foresee, or is it even possible, I mean, it's an idea and it's something that might be even a bit out there, but something tied to health and recovery along the lines of a DDP yoga where you have a studio and those check-ins aren't just tied to maybe the application, but having something where it's total wellness as well?
Yes. Oh my gosh. We are in the process of doing business with DDP. yes, he is our guy. You know, what he's been able to do for retired pro wrestlers, especially Jake the Snake,
mm-hmm.
and guys in the military, you know, he's done people of all walks of life. You know, DDP is incredible, and he has come out with a great concept, a great workout, a great diet. He was the one guy I looked at that I said, you know what, we want to implement his plan with the Angle Strong Initiative. So we're in the process of talking to him, and we're going to work out the details, and eventually we're going to be working with him. I do believe that all addicts need structure.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have structure, they're lost. And it has a lot to do with, you know, addicts are compulsive. Okay, they can't just do something at a normal rate. I won a gold medal because I'm compulsive. You know, that's all I did. I became the best pro wrestler in the world because I was compulsive. I did it very quickly. So you have this passion that's pretty much OCD, and when you start taking drugs, you get compulsive with that. So, you know, it's one of those things where you need structure all the time. And this app will have the structure. The website, anglestone.com, will have structure. It'll give you everything you need to keep living day by day. And we don't want it to be the old, it's not that AA doesn't work. It does. It's done a phenomenal job for over 100 years. But the fact is, they always tell you rehab, things are going to get difficult for a while. You're going to relapse. You know, you're going to mess up. I never relapsed. I never messed up. You know, quit telling me this. They're trying to tell you what can happen to you when you get out.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is more of a positive message. This is your new life. Enjoy your new life. You know, embrace it and have fun with it. And if you want to talk about your addiction, go ahead and do it. For so many years, I've been told not to talk about it and keep it quiet, and that it's taboo. Well, the taboo has become mainstream, and there's, you know, they're now, people need to speak up.
Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate because when you talked about how AA is saying that this could happen, it's almost as if they're planting that seed of doubt that it's going to happen. It could happen, but if you set somebody else to do that, then it's a matter of I told you so, and I guess I can definitely see how that would be a negative message to anyone. So,
yeah, I mean, you know, it made me really nervous. It made me feel like I was going to be a screw up with my life when I was in rehab. And don't get
have all the addicts relapse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's great. I'm glad you told me. Now I guess that gives me an excuse to go ahead and relapse when I get out. I don't believe that. I believe that you can live a new life, you can live clean, you can find other passions, other things that give you different kind of highs. For me, it's been God and family, and I haven't looked back since. And don't get me wrong, when I was in rehab, the first thing I said is, God, they're telling me I can never take this drug the rest of my life. I don't know if I can handle that. I can't take it 20 years from now. I can't drink. I can't take any pills. This is impossible. I don't know how I'm going to do this. So you get overwhelmed in there, but the fact is, you know, you really take it day by day. You know, I have learned in rehab, and this is one great thing they told me is, you know, just live for today. Don't worry about what you did yesterday. Don't worry about tomorrow. Just stay clean today and worry about just today. I'm okay with that. I can tell myself every morning, listen, just stay clean today. That's all you need to do. And it becomes a lot easier. And the longer you're out of rehab, the longer you stay clean, the easier it does get.
We would be hard-pressed with your background not to touch upon wrestling a little bit.
No, please.
Now, it's interesting because it isn't necessarily tied to addiction, but I do wonder about something else. So, wrestling, being competitive in the field close to 20 years, if not more so, how have you found wrestling promotions have taken steps to advocating for proper treatment of its talent, whether that's injuries, its long-term effects, whether that is substance abuse? Have you seen a progression or a change?
Oh, gosh, yeah. You know, the whole reason WWE did not want to take me back the past few years is the fact they wanted to see how I was going to do. You know, when I got out of rehab, I made apparent I wanted to go back. And they were like, well, first of all, this guy ruined his reputation. He had 4 DUIs in 5 years. He's been in trouble so much. We don't know how his neck is. We don't know if he's still taking medication. He could have relapsed. He could be a druggie right now. And I understood that. And I understood it was going to be a process. And it was going to take a while. You know, the WWE has done an incredible job on both their drug policy and the wellness policy. For one, their drug policy, very few of their athletes take any type of drug. And if they do, they get suspended or fired.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while you hear about one of them that gets caught. They're all getting drug tested. So, you know, it just goes to show you how well they have done, how far they have gone with their drug policy. You know, 99% of athletes have stayed clean. That wasn't happening 20, 25 years ago.
No, agreed.
But they didn't have the drug policy back then.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is, Daniel Bryan had the same neck injury as me. I wrestled at WrestleMania after I was diagnosed with a broken neck, and that's WrestleMania 19.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel Bryan can't even get back. That shows you the kind of wellness policy that they have now for their athletes. They have put the athletes first and said, listen, we're sorry, but if you don't pass the physical, if you're not ready to wrestle, and a doctor, one of our doctors, not a doctor off the street that, you know, because what I did back then in WrestleMania 19 is I talked my doctor into clearance. You know, now you can't do that. They have great doctors there, Dr. Maroon, Dr. Black. They do the drug policies and the wellness policies. They are going to have to clear you. So WWE has done an incredible job of making it very difficult for any athlete that's subpar, that's not ready to return or cannot return, to come back. For me, I have not taken the wellness. I haven't taken the physical. If I do, I'd imagine I would pass. But, the fact is, they just wanted me for the Hall of Fame strictly, and they would talk to me afterward, and that's all the word I've got. So I'm okay with that. I mean, if the Hall of Fame's the last thing I do, I'm cool with that. If they do decide to work with me and do some more, ambassador role or GM role or coach or manager role or even wrestling, I'd be willing to do that. I've always wanted to finish my career in the WWE, and at least, at the very least, I have the Hall of Fame to look forward to.
Well said. So anyone that is hearing, it's right now been listed. There's nothing confirmed for Kurt Angle after the Hall of Fame because rumors tend just to float. So unless there's actually proof of it after, you'll see after. Beforehand, we can speculate all we want.
Yes, you can. There have been a lot of speculation.
Wrestling has a tendency, now you've seen the business side of it, you've been in the ring, you've been part of more than one facet. Wrestling has a tendency of being circular in nature. How have major wrestling promotions, you've been part of two in particular, come around the last decade to showcase talent that were relatively unknown and say on the independent scene and brought to the forefront?
Well, you know, there have been a lot of talent that have come through, and I especially think that right now, at this point in time, there is more talent than I've ever seen in the business. From both a wrestling standpoint, psychology, and also athletic standpoint, it's become more competitive, and I believe because of that, it's a lot harder to, when you have 20 kids that are, have all the full potential of being the top guy in the company, it's kind of hard to pick the one, you know? I think there was a stint in WWE where when John Cena, was the top guy in, mid-late 2000s, there was a Randy Orton and there was, a few other guys that you knew were going to rise to the top because they were head and shoulders above everybody. That's not occurring anymore. There's just so many guys that are so close to competitively, especially when, WWE has brought a lot of other talent from other promotions over, like an AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Bobby Roode, Eric Young. On top of their talent and the NXT talent, and they're going to the UK to get talent, it's just become overwhelming. Like, which of these guys are you going to pick, and which ones are going to be your top guys? It's made it a lot more difficult for the WWE to pick who they want in that position. A lot of people say, well, it's not like it was in the Attitude Era. There were so many great guys. I think because we had a lot more leeway. We had a lot more to be a different type of character. We had a porn star, for Christ's sake. We had a pimp, Godfather, Vito Vena. It was just more broad. It was easier to hit all different demographics. Now in the PG era, it's really difficult to separate these talents and say, well, this guy is this and that guy is that. You're seeing a lot, of it coming together and under the same umbrella that PG rated. For a merchandise standpoint, it's awesome. I mean, because you're marketing the kids. But from a creative standpoint, it gets a little more difficult.
It would be really simple to talk about TNA and the WWE, but in now the Western world, the rising popularity of New Japan Pro Wrestling continues to grow. Discuss, if you could, your experiences there and any moments you may have that are close to you from your time competing for them.
Oh, I had an incredible time competing in New Japan. Going over there, wrestling guys like Tanahashi and Nakamura. My favorite, Yuji Nagata. If you didn't see that match, you have to watch it. When you go over there and you wrestle a talent for the first time ever, you never met him before, never tied up with him, and you're going to work with him that night, and it turns out to be 4 or 5 stars, it goes to show you how good of a company they have over there. They have a lot of great wrestlers. And a lot of guys from the West are going over there. So there's a good mixture of them. And it's just amazing how far that company has come because it was big for a long time and then it kind of calmed down for a bit. Now it's making its comeback. So I'm very happy. I really think that pro wrestling right now or sports entertainment, there's a lot to choose from right now. I mean, WWE is a monster, no question. It always will be. But it's nice to see other promotions, doing fairly well.
Well, I had a chance to once speak to Steve Corino, and he had said, yes, WWE is the be-all and end-all and is the biggest promotion in the world, but it doesn't mean that there aren't different tastes for different people and different promotions that can still appeal to you, and you don't have to feel tie to one. So I would always say, if you're going to complain about something, why are you spending your time watching it? There's enough options out there that you can explore. So,
yeah, I agree with you. But, you know, when it comes down to it, I think every wrestler aspires to be in the WWE. Why would they?
Agreed.
The problem is, for a lot of them, the problem is the structure, you know, the grind. Performing so many days a year. It's also being at the arena for 12 hours every single day. A lot of talent might not take that at the time because they like the more relaxed atmosphere of the other, you know, the other territories. So that's not territories, but other companies.
Right.
Promotion. Also, you know, God forbid, you know, there are some guys out there with an extreme amount of talent, and I mean a low percentage of guys, that are still doing the stuff they should be doing, and they know if they go back to WWE, they're going to get drug tested. So, and that's a small percent, but there are some big names that, you know, that I would never point out, and I have the utmost respect for them, but there are some names that don't want to go back, because they do want to do their own thing. And the cool thing about the small promotion and the independence is you can do your own thing, not just from that standpoint, but from a creative standpoint, from a wrestling standpoint. You know, I just did a match with Cody Rhodes for NEW, and, you know, we didn't talk about the match until 45 minutes before the match started. You know, in WWE, you're there all day. You're constructing, you're putting it together, you're making sure you got your eyes dotted, your teeth crossed. You know, it can get a little overwhelming. It's a lot of hard work to be the WWE. I'm not going to deny that. But for 99% of talent wants to be in the WWE, and there's no reason why they shouldn't. But there are some talents that like to relax after the other person.
Now, as a father myself, I can find definitely the challenges of work-life balance are difficult. How are you able to make it work, and what do you find to be its greatest challenge?
Being a father?
Balancing between being a dad and having the kind of crazy schedule that you do. How do you make it work?
Well, you know what? My schedule isn't crazy anymore. I do the English Strong Initiative, and I can do most of that from home. I do speak at different events and stuff like that, but, you know, in the past couple of years, I've been very, very part-time.
Mm-hmm.
TNA, I only did 40 days in the whole year, my final year. The year before that, I did about 80. So, you know, I wasn't extremely busy where I was traveling so much, and it allowed me to, last year, I think, 8 matches. For different indie promotions. So I spend a lot of time at home. I really enjoyed it. It's really hard for me to leave home because I love being a father and I love being a husband. And I love being with my family. So I could never go back to that grind again. And I don't think WWE would want me to. I think they know where I am in my life. And they, you know, 48 years of age, I couldn't do that type of grind anymore. So I've learned how to be a better father because I've been home more, because I've been with my kids. I'm teaching them stuff. I'm playing with them. I'm spending time with them. I'm watching movies with them. So it is hard, especially when you're in the grind of any company that does over 150 or 200 days a year to be a good father, a good husband, and a good wrestler. It's almost impossible.
Now, if your kids were to... Some wrestlers, I guess, would be potentially apprehensive about their kids becoming involved in the business. If your kids were to approach you with that interest or wanting to pursue it as a profession, what would you say to them? And if you were to be fine with it, what would you teach them that they could possibly do differently than you did?
Well, for me, I don't want to coach my kids to do it. I have one son, Cody, a special kid I love very much. He has a form of autism, so he really enjoys wrestling. He loves it. It's his passion, pro wrestling. But I really don't have control over him or my oldest daughter, Kira, who's 14 years old. Cody's attend. They're with their mother in Nashville. If it were up to me, I'd probably steer him in a different direction. Most likely to do something in real sport. My younger kids, my three kids, they won't be involved in the sport. And it's not because I didn't enjoy it. I loved it. But there's, you know, when you get to my age and you look back and you see everything that I've done and everything I've accomplished, it's great. It's wonderful. I've been very blessed. But, you know, my body paid a price. And, you know, I've been able to take care of it now, you know, pain medication free, but it's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. You know, I spent 2.5 hours a day working on my body, fascia massage, traction, yoga, anti-gravity, stretching, working out, lifting, cardio. It's become very high maintenance for me just so I can enjoy my kids. I don't want my kids to live their second half of their life like that. There is life after wrestling, and I'm beginning to learn that. And looking back, it's like, do I want my kids to feel the way I do at 48? No, I don't.
Arguably, one of your most underrated feuds, I guess, as a fan, my perspective, was you working with, at the time, known under the name of Desmond Wolfe, a.k.a. Nigel McGuinness. How would you describe that experience, and does he take the claim of potentially being the greatest wrestler to never be in the WWE?
I believe so. I think he was really talented. I really thought that he was better than I expected him to be. Mm-hmm. Nigel was a very special talent. He had some great technique. One of the best technical wrestlers I've ever wrestled. He was so good that he forgot how to be a heel. In other words, he was literally out-wrestling me as a heel. and I had to tone him down and make him understand, listen, I'm the good guy, you're the bad guy, I'm supposed to out-wrestle you. There were certain holes and locks to put me in that I couldn't escape them. Now, in a shoot I could have, but in a pro wrestling sense, I couldn't.
Exactly.
And I had to teach Desmond how to give and take. Desmond can eat you alive if he wants to. That's how much technique he has. He knows a lot of stuff, and he's very good at what he does. But once he got that concept of babyface heel, he was able to give and take, and he became even a better heel because of it, and he became a better wrestler. But when I first met him, he wrestled like a babyface all of the time because he was so damn good at it, and he dominated every opponent he wrestled. So, you know, once that got him toned down, he became even better of a wrestler. I think that he is the best wrestler that ever went to WWE. I think he could have went if he didn't have the medical issue, and he would have had an incredible career.
Now, we mentioned it earlier, your upcoming induction to the WWE Hall of Fame, you said, I'm coming home. Does a return to the WWE help fans and help you to cement your legacy?
Yes, I always thought I would return. You know, unfortunately, my departure with WWE in 2006, it wasn't a great departure. It wasn't like, you know, the WWE had bad feelings toward me or I had bad feelings toward them. It was more of, you go your way, we'll go our way. Go deal with your issues and come back when you're ready. Unfortunately, I didn't deal with my issues for 10 years. And the WWE also, strongly suggested I go to rehab right when I quit, and I didn't. So there were a lot of harsh feelings toward WWE, but they were all my own doing. If I didn't get caught up in painkillers, if I didn't get injured so much and rush back, talk my doctors into clearing me and re-injuring my neck, I would have probably stayed with WWE for another 10 years. So it was more of my own fault. The hardest part was going back and meeting with Vince and apologizing to him and taking, I had to own up to what I did. It wasn't like difficult. It was just hard to go back to a guy that I had such a great relationship with, and I kind of foiled it and go back and say, hey, I know I messed up, and you know, is there a way that you can forgive me? Even if I can't wrestle anymore, at least, you know, let me come back. wrestling, WWE, NXT, the UK wrestlers. And then I went to Vince and he hugged me and he sat down. And we didn't even talk about wrestling. We talked about my kids. We talked about his family. We just talked about, you know, things that were important to us outside of wrestling. So it was really cool to have that meeting with him. And it made me feel like how it used to be. You know, when I first started out, Vince and I had a very, very close bond. And unfortunately, I put a dagger in that bond late in my career in WWE. And I got the more reckless I became, the more angry I became, the more reckless I became, the more angry I became. Mm-hmm. It got to the point where, you know, it put a lot straight on Vince. So I could understand if he had hard feelings for me, but he didn't.
You guys have come full circle. It took time. You're at a place where you're happier with who you are, and definitely the WWE is happier to having you part of that family once again, and it shows.
Yes, it does. I think that you just pointed it out. They wanted me to be happy with who I was. They didn't want to be happy with who I was. They wanted me to be happy with who I was, and I was for years. And that's one thing, you know. I've seen a lot of talent in the past that WWE have harsh feelings towards WWE, and then I find out later that it was actually their own doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the same. So it's like, you know, sometimes pride gets in the way, and you think you're the most valuable guy there, whether you are or not. You're part of a machine, and you're just a tool in that machine. You're not the machine. You are. You know, you're part of what makes you go. And no matter how big or how small you are, the WWE is a machine, and you're just part of it.
Fans will definitely know of who you faced, the classic matches, whether they're in TNA or in the WWE or Impact Wrestling. But if there was a match, if there was a person that we hadn't necessarily heard about that was the one match, the one guy that definitely took you to a limit or put on a show with you, whether it was Wrestle an Hour Broadway, who would you say that would have been?
You mean somebody I never faced?
No, someone you faced, but it wasn't brought, and it wasn't necessarily the most advertised, and it was maybe on quieter, maybe it was in the UK, maybe it wasn't given a lot of attention.
You know, I really enjoyed this kid's style. He was in TNA. He's now in WWE, but we had a match, and we didn't have a lot of time. It was about 10 minutes, and I really enjoyed the way he worked. And the thing is, there was a spot that was blown. It wasn't my fault. It was his. But all seriousness, Austin Aries. Wow, that kid is so good. I would put him up there with an AJ Styles or Samoa Joe as far as his ability to work. He is a little smaller, but he makes up for it. He reminds me of a young Chris Benoit. And,
really?
What Chris was able to do. Yeah. Austin's very intense. He's got a lot of skill. And not only that, but he has some really good gift of gab. He's very intelligent. Very precise on what he does, and I would have loved to go an hour with him. I think that we would have lived up. And then that's the guy that you're asking me that I formerly wrestled, and I wasn't with the outcome, it would have been awesome.
That's fantastic. You know, if anybody was watching Raw, I guess, I'm not sure when this will necessarily be played out, but on the March 6th edition, you know, he just announced his return. He's challenging Neville. And anybody that's heard him knows he's got a great gift to gab. And on commentary, he's clever and he's witty and he comes up with these one-liners. So that's just one side of him. But to be in the ring, it's I can only imagine.
Yeah, he's got it all. You know, the only thing, you know, in a wrestling world where everything is perfect, it'd be great if he was 6 foot, 220 pounds. But he's not. That doesn't mean he's not great. A lot of promoters do like the bigger guy. And Austin Aries, although he's not, he makes up for it in other ways.
Was there anything before we let you go, Kurt, and you've given us almost 3/4 of an hour of your time, which is incredible. Is there anything else you'd like to share, promote, advocate for, want fans to know about Kurt Angle moving forward?
Well, the only thing I want to say is I'm really happy to be back to WWE. I do believe that we're going to come out with a long-term relationship eventually. If you never saw me or you never heard of me, go to WWE Network and check out my matches. If you don't think I'm really that good, you'll find out that I am pretty good. So, I know there's a younger generation that might not really know me that well. Thanks to WWE Network, they might already know me. But, the people that did get to see me back in WWE between 2000 and 2006, they know how good Kurt Angle is. And if they didn't follow me in TNA, at least they saw that. And I have to say, though, I became a more seasoned wrestler in TNA. And unfortunately, a lot of people at WWE Universe didn't get to see that. So I still got it. So, if I do wrestle again, you'll be able to see me. But if you can, go back and check out the Kurt Angle match between 2000 and 2006.
That's always a concern with the newer generation is, are they going to be able to connect with somebody? Mick Foley, even though he's not wrestling, there's still that role, and there's still, he's got the connection with Holy Foley. And, I mean, you're coming back. There are fans that are longtime fans that connect to that. But I guess I could definitely see how that'd be a concern. Are people going to get it when it comes to Kurt Angle and how funny he can be and how dark he can be and yet how seasoned he can be when it comes to the ring, so.
Yeah, hopefully they'll find that out. Hopefully I'll be wrestling again. You never know.
Definitely. We'd like to thank you once again, Kurt, for Mark Madison and Main Event Madness. This was your Olympic gold medalist and current upcoming WWE Hall of Famer, Kurt Angle.
Thanks, Mark. Take care, man.
You too.
Hangman is coming down from the gallows and I don't.
All right, guys, we are back here on Main Event Madness Radio. Right now, you are listening to Renegade, the official single from the band Shallowside. You can check them out on Facebook and Twitter at Shallowside Band. Again, this is their single Renegade. You guys check them out on iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get, hopefully, your music legally from. Check them out. Support the band. They do a great job. And thank you again to Shallowside for allowing us to use Rebel and Renegade as the official theme songs of Main Event Madness for the last 6 months, year or so, almost now?
Yeah, a good 6 to 9 months, I'd say.
Yeah, about that. It's been great to work with them. And I want to give a shout-out to Mark Madison, Mike Holland, and Brandon Lasher, guys who are going to make it tonight. Thank you for working with us, for working with me. The last couple of years. What I'm basically getting at is I don't know for certain if the show will come back. I'm fairly confident it will, but I do need to take some time for myself, recharge some batteries, reassess some things, and we'll go from there. But thank you to those gentlemen. Thank you to Greg DeMarco of ProWrestling.biz and the .biz Radio Network for allowing us to air these last few months on his network, and I appreciate the invitation when I'm ready to come back. Greatly appreciate that. Best of luck to Greg DeMarco and his team over there at the .biz Radio Network on ProWrestling.biz. Evan Ginsberg of the Evan Ginsberg Show on Village Connection Radio. You can check him out every Saturday morning or Sunday morning, I believe it is now. Sunday morning, I'm sorry. And I know I'm missing some other people. I hope I do come back. I'm pretty sure I will. but I've said this to people, and I know I'm peeling the curtain back a bit. I've said it to people, and Al was very similar in this. If I'm going to do it, I'm not going to do it half-assed. And I think that's what's killed me so much with a lot of what so a lot of these weeks I feel like I have done a half-ass, and I do apologize. But when we come back, I promise I won't be. But it's gonna be a little while. Maybe, who knows? Maybe some impromptu shows every now and then. Maybe me and Wayne will dust off the headsets a little bit, and or me and Mark or whoever. Who knows? Never know who will drop in.
Who?
You never know who. So Flash Main Event Madness and at John MEM Radio. I will not be going anywhere as far as social media is concerned. Every Monday that I am off from work, I will be live tweeting during Raw as much as I can. So you guys will still be able to connect with me. I'm going to try to get some more traffic, some more stuff on Facebook. Definitely guilty of not getting enough content, I guess you could say, on the Facebook page. But thank you to Wayne for being literally the backbone of this show for the last 3+ years. Like I said, most likely it will be when, but if we don't come back, thank you to all of you. Over 275,000 of you have listened to this show. It's humbling to hear a number like that. But any thoughts, Wayne?
Before you even wrap, it's a big thank you to you for having the passion to do this.
Oh, before we leave. In that case, for Wayne Daly, Alfonso Merriman, the former host of this show, Mark Madison, Mike Holland, Brandon Lasher, Hank McAllen, Evan Ginsberg, I am John Curry. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in these few years, guys. Appreciate it. Hope to see you guys soon and be able to do this more and all over again, guys. Be good, be safe, Lord willing. You guys will catch us back here at some point. Have a good one. Have a great rest of your Easter, guys. A lot of people are on the tail end of spring break. If you're on it, enjoy it. I know a lot of the schools around here are. That's really all I got, guys. Until next time, see ya.
Peace. Hey, you still here? Show's over. Season's ended. We'll see you when we let you know. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.